You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to Noise Direction, the punk music industry podcast for people who spend too much time on punk, teach you how to spend too much time on punk. I'm your host, Matt Bacon, here with my co-host, Scotty Tank Rhymes.
Yo, what's up? Here's the thing about punk. Punk is subjective. So where a punk podcast could mean whatever the hell you want. You know what more people think? More people have opinions about what's not punk than what is punk, though, which is kind of just kind of discouraging to people who talk too much about punk all the time. But here we go.
You can't just cite your own tweets in the intros to our podcast, Scotty.
Well, that was a today's tweet, so it's like really fresh, right?
Yeah.
You know what I learned? I spent a little time going down like a punk meme rabbit hole or wormhole. I don't know which animal's more appropriate. The other day, and I realized something that it's always been true about punk, but I think it really shines through in the memes of 2021, is that for a lot of people, being punk is being totally suspect of anyone else who claims to be punk. And for better or worse, it drives me crazy, but it's very much been part of the subculture always. It's just, when I was spending too much time on some punk meme pages, I realized that that's a really strong thread of how that whole cottage industry of extreme memes exists. So, and today's podcast is about punk memes.
Punk. Today we are talking about what a record label does.
What does a record label do? Now, this idea was spawned off your tweet or a Bacon bit, where I didn't think your bit was wrong. I was just busting your balls which is probably what happens all the time. You're like, I can't give every single bullet point of the subject I'm talking about in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Which was what I replied to you, like, Matt, you forgot this.
Yeah. So, and it's like, I can't. Also, I find when you have more than 3 points in a video, like you're going so fast that people forget point one by the time you get to the end.
Oh yeah, it's like doing this podcast when the podcast was 45 minutes and my brain was scrambled past 25, so we cut it back down.
Yeah, this is what happened.
I can't even remember any of my great ideas at the end to share with the world.
But the point being, so what does a label do?
There's two reasons. So this episode is going to be for two things. It can give people looking for a label will get game off this episode, and also labels in their first couple years can maybe pick up some game from this episode as where to steer the ship next once you get your legs, right? So to me, I'm like old school, but I think this old school label value is still extremely important today. And I do a lot of things here at Tank Rhymes that are revolved around this. And it's something that gets missed with a lot of newer labels, and bands looking for labels don't realize that they should be looking for this. It's also one of the most difficult tasks to achieve. And it took me a decade, and I got burned a lot and lost 5 figures in the process. Okay. So what am I talking about? Distribution. Okay. Stores are coming back. Stores were open. Stores killed it on Discogs and bought and sold tons of our records through the pandemic. And by really stepping up their mail order game and letting people in, you know, three at a time with masks and gloves and all that stuff. But, you know, more and more stores are opening up. And I think it's super, super important to strive to have worldwide distribution as a label. Yeah. Getting your record into stores is very important. If you have a band on your label that tours, chances are that they stop at a lot of record stores. There's a lot of free time during the day when you're on tour, And when I'm not picking up, when I'm not looking up where the best vegan junk food is in town, I'm looking up where's the record store. I want to stop by. I want to say hello. I want to check out stuff. And really, a lot of tours are a bunch of guys going to a bunch of different record stores every day. So, and what happens is what really upsets bands, which isn't really fair to the label entirely, but man, when a band is on tour and they're hitting the fifth or sixth record store in a row that does not have their brand new record in stock, you start getting some animosity there. And maybe rightfully so, but not, and maybe it's misdirected a little bit. So striving for distribution, I think, is a really important part of stepping up your label. And when you're looking for a label, that's something that you need to look for. Where do these records go? How available are they worldwide, right? So what was my other point? Was reel me in, Maddie. Reel me in real
quick.
Okay,
so distribution is a big part of it. But I also think people think that a label is going to blow them up, right? And get them on tour or get them... Talk about that.
Well, here's the two things that I wanted to touch on. So we'll get back to distribution once I get my head about me. But I know that's a much more boring part than this next point. You're looking for a label that's a tastemaker. And that doesn't mean that they're like... steering the ship of popular culture. It just means that they have a small, rabid following that's super interested in whatever they're doing next. This is what's going to give you a leg up. Now, I don't see them. I hear from bands who hit me up and they want a label. And I explain to them that that's not how my label works, but that there's plenty of labels who openly are searching for submissions, right?
Sure.
But I think a lot of bands are so hot to get on a label, right? And I get that feeling that it's some sort of validation or whatever that you're on a label. But if you're like online, like almost begging people to put out your shit, and let's be real, a lot of new labels that are going to work with a brand new band that doesn't have a lot of recording or touring history, which is a lot of new bands right now because we haven't had shows for 15 months, right? So you could have an EP or an album's worth of shit ready and you haven't really got out there and done anything. So let's be real. What kind of labels are going to jump at this? A label with that doesn't have much tastemaker status or much or any distribution at all. And I want to like choose my words carefully here because I want to encourage as many labels to start as possible. We need more labels. Like as labels grow, someone needs to come in them underneath because just like there's status levels of bands like in the lineup or on that, there's status level of labels, of course. And a lot of bands, as they go through their career, hopefully without burning any bridges along the way, will move from smaller to larger label. But if you're out like begging people to put out your record on or your tape on Instagram and shit, I think that it is a poor move to give away or beg someone to release your recording so you can get like 50 free tapes. That's what I'm boiling down to. Like a lot of people want to work all season long, practice their ass off, spend money on a practice space, gear, recording, all this stuff, just to have somebody else with a freaking Bandcamp page to give them free 50 tapes so they feel like they're this validation of being on a label.
Sure.
So I guess that's my whole warning. And so if you're really looking for that, I want bands to think about if the label's a tastemaker and has some sort of influence in your scene, no matter how micro or macro of a scene it is. And if that label is going to distribute your record, or are they just going to make it available on the exact same website that you already have access to in a page, Bandcamp, right? So one more thing I want to add while I'm talking about bands jumping or being aggressively looking for a small startup label to help them. And now, like I said, I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I think a lot of great relationships could spawn from a brand new band and a brand new label, right?
Yeah.
But be aware that like giving away your digital or something like that in perpetuity to a label that gives you 50 cassettes, like you're not doing yourself any favors. You're doing yourself a disservice. And I've struggled with this as a much as a medium-sized label where I'm going back, I've gone back and looked at some of the digital deals with my bands and actually been like, why do I get to collect money on this in perpetuity when I'm not working this anymore? Like there's something's got to give. And a lot of times when you sign to a label, there's a 5-year or a 10-year or a 15-year or a 25-year period of when they have that music. But I think a lot of internet handshake deals, no one really discusses it. They just, it just kind of happens. And maybe it's taboo to go back and ask about money or I don't know, but.
Yeah, and this is just the point I want to make just quickly is like.
Please.
Small internet labels. So like Tank Crimes has a method, has some software, I'm assuming, that automatically handles digital rights payouts. Right, with your distributor or whatever.
I actually could, but I'm old school and I fucking get out my yellow legal pad and I type in. I mean, I do have a back end where I can look it up, but I don't have my shit automatically split it up for everybody. Or,
but what I'm saying is like a lot of small labels don't have the capability to actually like, you know, it's not their job. So they don't sit down every month and go like, okay, like how much do I pay this guy? Okay, I pay him this much, right? Like most small labels don't do that. So like you're not like you won't get meaningful payouts from that.
Yeah, but also truth be told, if you don't have like 5,000 monthly listeners on Spotify consistently, no one owes you shit, really. That's the other thing too, because there's the reverse side where the label with 150 monthly listeners is wondering where their check is. And that's not really a thing either. So that's kind of educating both sides there.
But I just want to circle back on this. Okay. The thing that bands always say is like, oh, I want a label to blow us up.
Yeah.
I have blown people up as a label, you know, most notably maybe, or most recently rather Capra. Right. When people ask about, you know, we need a label who can blow us up. How do you reply?
I mean, I don't even know where to start with that because I wouldn't, I couldn't, you can't blow up a band that has that just from nothing, right? So it's a partnership. So the label doesn't blow you up, but the team of the label, if it's the right fit and you've got the right people working, that can move you ahead. But a band really blowing up really depends on a song, not an Instagram page, right? I mean, I don't care who's working your record. I don't, you know, like you might have to go back to the drawing board there.
I would broadly speaking agree. I also think though that like, here's the thing is like when you're, you know, when people talk about, oh, we want a label to blow us up. You know, realize depending on the label, they may or may not have the relationships you're looking for to quote unquote blow you up. You know, I don't think that, you know, and like, I think like, so you've never had someone come to you and be like, hey, can you blow us up like you blew up Necrot?
Yeah, but I mean, that's not somebody I'm going to work with. You know, if I have a band, I'm working with a label and they go, let's do a, can we work on an aggressive long-term campaign similar to what you did with Necrot? I mean, that's kind of the bar I set for myself and any band that works with us moving forward, right? So I have, but I mean, there's another side of this too. Like, I mean, I've like, called in some super favors for bands before.
Yeah.
That kind of backfired. Let me give you an example.
Yeah, 100%.
I had a band that was a really strong basement band, right? They were rocking every backyard party, putting out self-releasing, you know, 5-song cassettes every 6 months, rocking the DIY shows, all the stuff. We partner up, and I right away put a ton of energy into getting them onto larger shows. And I don't, not just club shows, like I got them on a show with Danzig. I got them on some shows with I Hate God, I think, just really like a huge step out of the basement, right?
Sure.
Even for the most popular band in the basement. And what happened was they weren't ready for the stage at the Warfield. Right? It's way different than the basement. It's so different. They weren't ready for it. Okay. And the audience there, that like an audience that is not like bring some PBR to the basement show, an audience that is like, I pre-ordered my $35 tickets for the concert 6 months ago, see that band and we're like utterly unimpressed. Right. And this is a series of shows. I'll just use that biggest one as a good example. So not really fault to the band. They had no, that was, they're just got kind of tossed into that larger arena, right? Like literally. And then it was a double-edged sword, right? Because now we've taken them out of their comfort zone, and that caliber of fan, I don't know if caliber is the right word, but that type of fan, a concert person, not a show person, was pretty unimpressed. And at the same time, there was backlash in the fucking scene they came from. Yeah. All of a sudden, there's shit talk among their like bands that were their comrades 3 months earlier. Because, I mean, for a million reasons, negative reasons we can go into about how bands don't always support each other, you know? And now this band was left in this limbo where, of course, a lot of their old fans came along for the ride, but they weren't ready for the much wider metal audience. And at the same time had somehow, very directly alienated a bunch of fans from the scene they came from who thought that was poser, sellout, like a bootlicking bullshit or something, you know? I mean, whatever goes back to my theory, how when you every time you double your fan base, you'll lose 10% off the back end. Some yeah. people just don't want to be a fan of a band that has too many fans, right? It's just a part of fandom, you know? It's a different type of person. So why did that's what, when a band asked to be blown up. And frankly, this band did not ask me to blow them up. I just used all my resources because that's what I do, right? I'm a record label. But yeah. I was learning lessons there. I mean, I just spelled them out for you. Just because someone can do something for you that appears to be this big launching pad, that can be dubious as well, even with the best of intentions on everyone's side. So that is actually the story I would tell if someone said, can you blow us up? I guess I would reply, are you fucking ready? And what makes you think you're ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when I wanted to, what I was saying is that I didn't want this to come off as like a shit talk on small labels because we need them. And I want to give a tiny story to explain how this like pyramid, I guess it's not a pyramid because it's not a scam or whatever, but how like this stairwell up, you know, goes. And just to be fun, you know, like, I don't know, like I always say that 10 Crimes is a small label and in the big picture, we really are. But I know that to a lot of bands and other labels and stuff, they don't think I'm a small label. Maybe I'm downplaying it a little bit. I mean, it is my livelihood, you know. When I met Brian Slagle, the owner of Metal Blade, he was very nice. First of all, I've only found camaraderie around among other label owners And I've tried to share that with every label I've ever met. And but what Brian Slagle said to me, and I had already been a label for like 13 years and had Billboard charting albums. He said to me, which I took zero offense to, oh, we need new small labels like Tank Crimes to keep the scene alive. And half of me's going, motherfucker, I've been doing this for 20 years. But then the other half of me's going, wow, I've really achieved something if this guy who basically fucking started DIY metal record labels when I was a fucking zygote has recognized what I've done and has given me encouragement. And so I feel like that's what I want to pass on to a smaller label, not a slight that like you're just getting started, but the truth that you're just getting started. And thank you, we need you. Please help boost up some bands to the next level. And then the next level of labels will boost them up. And then of course, what I'm trying to do is to be the final level, right? To work with bands very closely and a small amount of bands so I can handle it myself, but do the job a larger label can do and show the band you don't have to keep looking for what's the next step past me, while also being honest with myself and knowing that if that happens, that I will always support the band's career and that might be what they need to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes bands graduate, you know, but I just want to circle back on this, right? Because there's this idea that like, oh, we're going to get on a big label and they're going to put us on tour. Right. Like the label does. So for a couple things here. Okay. One, labels only help fans who want to be helped. There are bands I have signed who like think it's all like think that like now that they're signed, I'm just going to like roll out the red carpet and get them on. I don't know, get them on Heavy Talent Booking or get them on Nanotier, get them on one of the other agencies who I've been working with for years, like one of the homie agencies. Right.
Yeah.
And they think they're like, oh, well, if we signed to Ripple, like, Matt seems to know Nate Carson real well, so he could probably put us on tour with Yob. And it's like, no, because I want to help. Like, the reason I went balls out for Capra and pulled a million favors for them is because they were working their face off. And so it was like, okay, cool. We can pull out all the stops because, like, they're not going to make me look bad the way you looked bad when, you know, like, there was a bunch of blowback when your guys weren't able to live up to the level they needed to live up to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, this is the thing is, you know, like the bands who just like are on a label and are just like, hey, can you like get us an agent? We haven't actually ever done anything. Like, I don't want to help them. But the bands where it's like, oh shit, these guys, you know, help those who help themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think that you should look at, so let's take it to, okay, we are ready to sign to a medium-sized label that has the resources that could help us out, right? You have to look, of course, that signing is a victory in your career, right? You are moving forward, but it's really the next starting line.
Yeah,
not this is also the finish. If it's a finish line, there's a new starting line happening, right? Because no one in extreme metal or punk just wants to have you hand them a master tape and do all the work for you. Nor will that really work that well, because it's another thing. Like, you have to be really, really good, which of course I want every band to be really good and everyone to be really practiced. But what I'm getting at is it's much more difficult to win over a 1500 person crowd at a live show that has zero familiarity with you at all. That is extremely difficult. You might be better off throwing a couple covers in there, right? If you're playing in front of 1,000 plus people who have no fucking idea who you are. You're only there because somebody pulled a favor for you. Or you earned your own favor, you know, either way. If you can put in some work and now 300 of the 1,000 people have heard of you, you're already in a way better spot. And you're going to need to have put in that work to do that. Another thing is that getting out and working your band, just going out and playing shows, as opposed to just like sending out demos and stuff, is you are going to become a better band from playing more shows. And we've seen this before, and this is a tale as old as bands and recordings and stuff like that. Bands that are so hot to get a recording out and even self-release and go on tour and come home from that tour a way better band that's just ready to ditch that whole thing. A great example is one of my favorite bands, and a band that I got Maddie into, is the Bouncing Souls. The Bouncing Souls self-released an EP and did like a 50-day tour on it and came home and like kind of found their sound on that tour, right?
They did it too.
Rehearsing during sound checks, writing in the van, all that free time, the whole band together 24/7 for an entire summer. They came home and had found their sound, the sound that made them into a huge band. Now, they didn't start with that. And then they have like a joke. They even like reissued that 7-inch like 5 years ago as like the 25-year anniversary. And the whole joke was like, don't buy this record. We hate it. We're reissuing it because A, we're having an anniversary, and B, we're sick of people spending like $100 on it because it's rare, because it sucks, right? So take that to just any band that started over the pandemic and has really like busted out an EP and got some practices and stuff like that. If they're able to get out and play even 15 shows before the end of the year, they're going to be a better band, better suited to hit the studio, better suited to put out a better EP. Now, here's another reason why I think self-releasing would have just been fine for all those bands, because I think a lot of bands get this notion that once something's put down on tape, that's it, right? It's done. It's released. If you self-release an EP and go on tour and meet a bunch of friends and get a little buzz and find a label, nothing is stopping you from re-recording those songs a little bit faster, a little bit tighter, a little bit more, a new tone you found, a new, you know, the way. Things like drummers, yeah,
people
and
get really,
guitar
people get really
solos,
precious about that stuff.
Those things like, get better. Like, find a band that plays, that every guy plays the song the same as the album 20 years later. You'll notice when you go see bands on tour, you know, like a song they wrote, I'm talking about like legacy bands, a song they wrote 20 years ago, even if it's their biggest hit, even if they're closing with it every night, they're probably playing it a little bit faster. The guitar players maybe updated the solo. The singer might have, you know, changed the cadence in some places for something that works better live, which is another reason why you want to test songs out on the road. There's a lot of reasons, but nothing says you can't go back and re-record it. Or this happens all the time. You simply self-release or even release on a small label, and then a larger label just wants to re-release that to help get you momentum in their with the people that follow them while you're working on the next record for that label.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Maddie, what do labels do? My point today was that they get you distribution. It's really important. Startup labels, distribution is the hardest thing. I was ripped off by Choke Distribution, just was in Chicago. I was really excited when I got hooked up with them. They didn't even tell me they were going out of business, and they put my records on the curb. And because I didn't even know, I couldn't even send a friend in Chicago to go get them for me. They were just gone. That was $1,000. Not that big of a thing now, but at the time, $1,000 almost wiped me out. I was part of the independent label collective debacle, which fell out of the Mordam debacle, which fell out of the Lumberjam debacle. You can look Google all these words if you have no idea what I'm talking about. Distribution from the 90s to 2021 has risen, has crumbled, has reformed, all these things. And it took me a really long time to get where I'm at, where you can find my records in stores. When my bands go on tour, I feel confident that when they stop at record labels, they're gonna see their records, and that makes me feel really good.
There you go.
And then hype and buzz. And so is the label a tastemaker? And this really comes down to, and this is back to where, you know, we push social media a lot. That's how a label becomes a tastemaker. You gotta know how to work social media, or you're not. And sometimes, and I do this all the time, sometimes at the label, you have to just be the social media for the band. That's also a position that I take if you need to get it all down. So I think those two things are really important, and I hope some people got some game, and I'm always happy to answer more questions about this stuff, because nothing makes me more happy than seeing, even more so than seeing young bands succeed. Because it's really, you know, my area. I can't wait to see some of the labels that have popped up in the last couple years. That I've had an eye on, or maybe bought a tape or a 7-inch from. I can't wait until they're doing albums for bands that are going on world tours. Nothing would make me happier.
There you go.
And then the other thing that label guys, we always say to each other, and this is one of the reasons I think label guys and gals all get along really well. All of our friends play in bands. None of our friends own record labels. So if we can find each other, it's over. Get out of our way. We want to talk about taste making and distribution and all these boring things I just filled this podcast with.
Pretty much. This has been the Noise Direction Podcast. We'll catch you in a week.
Peace.
God damn it. It's not letting me stop. No, because like fucking...
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.